right, welcome everybody to the first of the two deep dive sessions on Azure SQL Database. This one is going to be business continuity and auditing. My name is Jan Engelsberg. I'm a program manager working out of Redmond. I'll be covering the business continuity part of this session, and then the second part of the session, my colleague Ayal Karmal from our team in Israel will cover the auditing part of this session. All right, so let's get started. As I just said, well, the first part will be business continuity, and then around halftime, we're going to switch over to the auditing part. In business continuity, I'm going to first cover, like, what are the scenarios? What are the things to look for? What do we mean, like, when we talk about business continuity, what are the scenarios that we are after? What are we trying to cover? And then we're going to look at the model that we have implemented. So it's a set of solutions for the different problems or for the different scenarios. I'm going to work through what they are, what they do. And then we're going to go through those different solutions, and I'm going to explain them in a little bit more detail, the high availability platform, database backup solutions, and then replication solutions. And then at the end, I will actually do a demo and show some of these things to illustrate the capabilities of the service. So let's jump into the scenarios. There are four in total. The first one is essentially a scenario of unplanned events, things like, hey, your disk fails, or a machine goes down, a hub fails, right? A switch burns down, right? We lose a rack in a data center. When you look at these scenarios, when you say, hey, you know, I have this rack that I support, never anything happens, well, we run this at a reasonably large scale, right? So you need to think about, we run thousands of machines actually in our data centers, and we have tons of switches and tons of racks all over the place. And so it becomes reasonably likely that these kind of things happen actually on a daily basis. And in fact, we do see these things happen on a daily basis. So that a machine goes down, it needs to be repaired. It's just a regular event that we deal with every day. The second scenario is really the user makes a mistake. So think of, hey, you drop your database by accident. That's kind of a dropping a database by accident. But hey, you delete a table by accident. Or probably things to think of is your application corrupts your data. Right? So you have a bug in your application, and it updates a bunch of rows that it wasn't supposed to update, and now you have the data corrupted. What do you do about those? We typically talk about this as oops recovery. It's like, oops, I made a mistake. So what do you do now? The next scenario is a slightly bigger one. We think of it as like some major event happens, some form of catastrophe, essentially, to one of our data centers. So think of, I don't know, as a major flooding. And we lose the data center, or there are malicious users that, I don't know, run an attack against one of our data centers, these kind of things. So obviously, we need to be protected against those kind of scenarios. And the last thing is what we call a event. Hello? So when you think of the three ones before, they're somewhat unplanned, right? I mean, we lose a machine, we can't really plan that up front, that we lose this particular machine, or the user makes a mistake. Well, he certainly didn't plan or do that, right? Or a flood, right? I mean, you can, hopefully we don't put data centers where there's lots of flooding going on, but really you can't predict these, right? But there are events that you can't predict and that we want to cover as well. So you can think of, hey, when we roll out an update to our service, right, we need to restart the machines. Well, that's a very well an event that we can plan and that we need to account for, and we need the technology to support this. Similar, actually, if you run an application and you have these kinds of events, these kind of planned events, how do you handle these events using our business continuity solutions? All right, so after defining the space that we want to cover, those four major scenarios, let's look at how our model looks like. So the first thing that we have is we have an uptime SLA, and we recently actually upped this to 99.99% for our new additions. So this uptime SLA really talks about these unplanned events that we have in our data centers, right? So a machine goes down, well, you shouldn't really be impacted by it, right? Your database should just keep working through those. And we are so confident on the systems that we use, and I'm going to show in a little bit how they actually work. We're so confident about these systems that we guarantee 99.99% of the time your database will actually be available. Then a little bit of quick background on these new service tiers and how we think about them, and especially the performance part we will cover tomorrow in the second deep dive session. But we have these service tiers. We have the basic tier, we have the standard tiers, and we have the premium tiers. And a good way conceptually to think about them is that the basic tiers, it's like if you think about, hey, I do a couple of transactions per hour, just in terms of the workload that you would put against a reasonably small database with small performance capabilities. Whereas the standard tiers, you can think about them, well, you know, it's kind of like a line of business application. You do like transactions per minute and there's more traffic. Right? And then the premium tiers where we think about, hey, you actually run transactions per second. So that's a system that has lots of load. So now when you think about these three different kind of like objectives that those databases are after, or like these loads that those databases are after, you potentially need different capabilities with regards to restore and disaster recovery, et cetera, and that you have different requirements for your data. So if you think about a premium database that runs potentially transactions per second, it would be reasonably bad for you if you lose a whole day of data. Right? Whereas if you run a basic database and, well, you know, you run a transaction here and there, it's also painful to lose a day worth of data. However, it's not as bad as on the premium ones. So that in mind, let me go through the marked in yellow here, through the capabilities that we have introduced in the business continuity part. The first one, the first two are backup-based solutions, and then the second two are replication-based solutions. So the first one, point-in-time restore, is the solution to cover these oops, I made a mistake scenario, right? What we do there is we allow you to go back in time over a certain period of time, and it is, for basic, it's 7 days, in standard it's 14 days, and in premium is up to 35 days. We allow you to go back on a minute granularity and restore your database to a certain minute that you specify, right? And we create a copy of the database and you can go back in. The next thing is GeoRestore. This is also a solution that is based on the backups that we take. And GeoRestore, what we do is we take daily backups and we use our geo-redundant storage in Azure to keep replicas of the backups. And in case of a disaster, you can go in and restore a daily backup, so the last backup that we took within 24 hours, and restore it anywhere in the world. So that's the second solution. And you can see that those two solutions are available in all service tiers. And this is kind of like the minimum set that we think is needed even for a small basic database that you need to be able to continue your business work. And one thing to mention here, those two solutions come for free. Right? So if you get a basic database, you pay around $5 a day, and Bill yesterday in the overview session had a good analogy. It's like, he said, well, it's really two cups of coffee, right? When you buy them somewhere, that's what this database costs. However, we give you the ability to go back 7 days at any point in time on a minute granularity, and we allow you to restore those backups, the last known daily backup. One thing to point out here, as soon as you create the backup, well, you actually have to start paying for that new database that we create. The same thing holds true for a restore that you do. We create a copy of the restore, and once we create it, you will have to start paying for it. The next thing is the standard geo-replication. Standard geo-replication is what we call an offline secondary, and the wording is a little bit interesting, I would say. The database is not really offline. Well, it's up and running, but you can't access it. So what happens there is you can choose on a standard tier or higher, you can opt in and say, hey, I would like this database to be replicated. And if you're familiar with Azure OLAP, there are the regions always have a pair where there's kind of like a secondary region. So if you choose to opt into this one, and you, we will allow you to select the server in one of the paired regions, and we will create a secondary database for you. I will start replicating the data into the database. Given that we actually have a database running for you, you will have to pay for them. However, you can't access them directly until a failover happens. So we give you a discount. It's not the full charge that you have to pay, but you have to pay for them. The last capability is the active geo-replication. And this is only available in premium. Here, what we allow you to do is create up to 4 secondaries. You can choose where you want to have them. So you can choose the region. Can be the same region, can be any other region. And those replicas are readable. So you get read access to the databases, which is an advantage if you think about offloading load from the primary databases. Say you have reporting, these kind of scenarios. There are some scenarios around load balancing, for example, that you can support with this. It is up to 4, because if you create the standard geo-replication on a premium database, which you can, then you essentially lose one of the 4 secondaries. Right? So it's up to 4 mix match out of those 2 solutions. Looking at the restore time objectives and the restore point objectives, in the geo-restore, well, given that we allow you to restore the latest backup out of 24 hours, the restore point objective is obviously less than 24 hours. So you can be lucky, and it can be a backup that we took 5 minutes ago, but you need to be prepared that the backup is 23 hours and 59 minutes old. The time objective that we have on GeoRestore is really only a target. And why this is only a target is we can't guarantee that we have capacity in the data center where you want to restore your database, right? So remember, we just take the backup and restore it into a data center. So it is depending on how much capacity does this data center have and how many other people are trying to do restores into this data center at a given point in time. So let's say there is actually a major event. A region goes down and a couple thousand or a couple 10,000 databases try to recover in the data center. Well, it takes us some time to get through the queue, and we need to organize capacity. You don't have this when you use standard or active geo-replication because of the fact that your database is already there. And we are continuously replicating the data. Hence, the restore point objectives are lower time periods, and the restore time objective is equally lower. All right, so much for the overall model that we have and the different types of capabilities. Let's now have a look at roles and responsibilities in this. You always think of a platform as a service. Well, the service does it all. I don't need to think about anything. This is true for a lot of things, but there are some other things that you as a user or a subscription owner need to think about. And so this is kind of like a comparison about what we do and what you have to think about. So on the Azure SQL database side, well, we obviously make sure that this is a geo-distributed service. So that means, well, we don't have only one data center, but we have multiple data centers. So that you can even start doing replication, right? If it's all in one data center, then it's not really helping us out if there's a disaster, right? The other thing that we obviously make sure is that not only the database service is available in different regions, but that the whole stack is available in all regions. So this is obviously our responsibility to make sure to make those capabilities that we introduce here usable. The next thing that we obviously have to make sure is that you can always log in, right? So metadata protection and recovery, this is clearly on us. You don't have to worry about, oh my God, they lost the subscription data and I need to back it up. The high availability part that I talked about earlier, given the fact that we run so many machines and at any given point in time, one of those machines can fail. This is something we need to fully automate, because you can't really have people monitoring clusters and say, oh, there's a machine that failed and now I need to trigger a failover, these kind of things, right? With the availability guarantee that we give, this has to be fully automated and fully managed by the platform. And we do this for you, and I'll show in a little bit how this works. I already talked about the fact that we are geo-replicating backups just to make sure, hey, if a region goes down, we can't afford to lose the backups in that region, right? We need to be able to support you in restoring your databases somewhere else. So we take care of all this distribution, nothing you need to think about. Whenever you actually do create standard replication or active replication, we obviously make sure that the data is being transported to the secondaries. Right, so again, nothing you need to think about. It's really one click, it's set up, you're good to go. We do all the compliance testing and certification on the platforms. Something that maybe Eyal will talk about a little bit later. I actually don't know, so no promises. But we obviously take care of this, right? So if you say, well, I need this platform to be compliant with this and this and this, well, there's no chance that you can actually ever figure this out, so we need to do this for you. And the last thing that we as the platform have to do is actually let you know if there is a problem, right? So in this high availability case, well, we wouldn't let you know that the machine went down because we recover this immediately. But if there's a disaster case and we lose a data center, for example, we only to some extent, or after some point actually, and I will cover this a little bit later, can make a decision to fail you over to your secondaries. But there's quite a bit of impact on you, and you need to potentially move other things. So what we need to do is let you know there's actually something that is an impact. There's a degradation in the service, and then you have to react to it. And because we don't know how your application works. So this is all that SQL database has to cover, and we are covering this. So now on the customer side of things, in these oops scenarios, well, obviously, you will have to detect that something happened, right? You made a mistake. We can't tell you that you deleted this table by accident versus you actually meant to delete this table, right? So this is something you need to detect there was a problem, and then you also need to know where to go back to, like what point do you want to restore, like when did the problem happen, and you need to go back to a point in time before. So this is something that you just need to be aware of, and you need to know that you, like, it's not like magic, you know? Like, you need to know if you do something wrong. The next thing here, planning database prioritization and region selection for disaster recovery. So if you think about secondary or the standard replication, like if you choose Europe, for example, well, we have two regions in Europe, right? West and North Europe. So When you're in West Europe and you choose secondary replication, well, then North Europe is the paired region. But what happens if West Europe goes down? Right. So then you're in North Europe, and that's all good. But if you then need to opt into another replication, right, or if you want to set up replication again, well, what do you actually choose? Or like, can you go with the default region that we say, or maybe in the worst case you need to actually upgrade to a premium to choose a different region? So these kind of scenarios you need to think about, and you need to think about it ahead of time, what can potentially happen if you get into the disaster case. The other thing, as I said, geo-restore, we don't actually guarantee you capacity. So you might have databases where it's like, you know, it's okay if they're offline for a day or two, and yeah, maybe I can restore them somewhere else where there is capacity, I'm more flexible, whereas your main production database, where you want this to be back up online right away, right? So there, like, using a replication-based solution might be the way to go, just to make sure there's actually capacity in the target data center and it is up and running immediately. As I already said, initiating failovers you will have to do. So you get a notification from us and say, well, you know, something is wrong with this data center. Probably at this point you already noticed you can't connect to your database, but we actually tell you, okay, looks like there's a major thing going on here, and you need to make a decision on what to do going forward. And one last thing that we see people actually often miss is doing these application DR drills, actually go through these scenarios and test this. I can tell you that we actually do these things. So we go through scenarios where we, for example, we have like a single cluster that contains all the metadata. We actually go through DR drills, right? We say, okay, let's make this one the main cluster, right? Let's move everything over. We go through these scenarios to make sure that we not only think we have it covered, but that we know that we have it covered. So if you have a whole application stack and you need to fail over the whole application stack, it's a recommendation for sure to actually go do this, right? Do you want to do it? Well, you don't have to do it with your production workload. You can set up a mirror, but you should actually at least once go through this DR drill to make sure you actually know what needs to be done and know what are the things that you can run into. All right. With having the roles and responsibilities covered, let's look at the solutions that we have, and I'll go into some technical details on how things work. The first thing is the high availability platform. So this is not new. We actually use this more or less since the beginning of the service. What we have is we have at least two secondary copies of your primary database. What this means is whenever you insert data, we do what is called a quorum commit. And what this means is at least one of the secondaries has to say, okay, I got the transaction, it's hardened, right? It is written to disk, it commits the transaction, and then the primary says, okay, we got you covered, the data is there. This only is for write operations, so if you have any read operations, this goes against the primary and we'll just return immediately, so there's no delay on this. But the important part is so at least one of your two secondaries, and in some cases actually three secondaries, has committed the transaction, which means we know that the data is at least on two different machines. We place those machines, or we place the databases actually in the data center on different machines. And there are two things that we guarantee. Three things actually. So the first thing, as I just said, it's never going to be on the same machine. The second thing is, it's actually never going to be on the same rack, right, in the data center, because the rack can go down, there's a switch that goes down. Obviously, that would be fatal if we had all your three database copies on the same rack, right? And the third thing is, we distribute them within the racks in what we call upgrade domains, which assures whenever we upgrade the service and we need to take your database or take machines down, that we never actually lose the quorum. And the quorum is at least two databases that are in active sync. So, in case we do actually lose a database, let's say we have an issue with the machine where your primary runs, what will happen there is we make one of the secondaries the new primary, and this is an operation that is very fast. We make this the new primary, and once we have this new primary running, there's still the one secondary database. What we do is we create another secondary. So we do the initial copy of the data and then keep it in sync to get back to the at least two copies of data. As I mentioned before, this is completely transparent for you. The only thing that you might notice is actually a disconnect. And then normally within at max 30 seconds, you can reconnect to your database. So if you're used to develop against cloud, then I'm sure you're familiar with the retry logic, right, that you need to implement for exactly these kind of cases. And retry logic generally actually is not only if we lose a machine, but there's anything that happens on the network connection from wherever you are to the databases will be covered by retry logic. So this is where retry logic comes into play. Obviously, if you would lose a secondary, well, the connection to your primary is fine, and you will never even notice that we reconfigured your quorum within the data center. As I mentioned, we're doing this for a long time, since the beginning of the service. And so there's like a handful of critical capabilities that we learned doing, and we actually learned automating it. Well, one is creating the replica itself after we detected something is wrong, right? So we detect something is wrong, we create the new replica, we synchronize the data and keep it synchronized. We stay consistent. So this is the quorum commit that I talked about, right? We detect failures. The ordering is a little off, right? We detect failures first. And this is actually, we're now after running the service for many years, we're actually very good at this, right? So if a machine goes down, we detect this immediately. We immediately reroute you to a new primary. And all these, which is called the failover. And all these capabilities actually give us the confidence in running it for such a long time to provide you those 4/9 of availability. And given that we have this all these capabilities on a locally, and we're very confident that those work very well, we use these technologies when we start doing geo-replication, for example. All right. So after the high availability part, point-in-time restore. As I said earlier, point-in-time restore is a backup-based solution. And to give you some background on how we do it, we once a week take a full backup of your database and store this in a geo-redundant storage. On a daily basis, we take differential backups from the weekly full backup. And every 5 minutes, we take log backups for the latest transactions. So if you try to restore something, what happens is we're going to go back to say, what is the last full backup? Then we apply the differential backup, the latest one, and then we play forward the transaction log to the point in time that you chose. And as I said earlier, this is you can go down to a 1 minute granularity. And given that we take those backups every 5 minutes, the log backup, so that there can be a data loss up to 5 minutes in the worst case, kind of like as we had in the backup-based solution. Well, not data loss, but like a gap of up to 5 minutes. And so you would have to wait for the next, like if you want to restore something that just happened a minute ago, you would have to wait until the next transaction log backup is taken, and then you can go back to this point in time. Or let me just walk through the scenario first. So let's say you actually made a mistake and you corrupt your database in any form. What will happen is you go in and use one of the APIs that we provide, and we have a REST API, a PowerShell API, and you can do this in the portal. And I'll show this actually in a demo after a walkthrough how this works. You can restore your database to the same logical server. It will create a database of the same performance level and service tier as it was at the point in time that you chose to restore. And once this is up and running, you can access the database. Normally, it's just another database. We will never actually override your existing database. The reason for this is we don't really know what went wrong, and we also don't know if you actually did something after the point in time something went wrong. So let's say you delete a few rows by accident, right? But you kept inserting after this, right? So you don't want to lose all the inserts that you did afterwards. You just want to restore those couple of rows that you by accident deleted. So you create a restore, right? Go into the database, get the data, reapply it to your actual production database, and then you can get rid of the restored database. So it would be a scenario we certainly don't want to overwrite your data. So this is why we always create a copy of this. And then, as I mentioned earlier, so in Basic-ing, you can go up back to 7 days, in Standard, 14 days, and in Premium, 35 days. And again, any point in time based on a minute granularity. All right, so geo-restore. I already said that we take those daily backups and put it in geo-redundant storage, which gives us the capability when we actually lose the data center to allow you to still access your data, just because it is geo-redundant. And this is all fully automated, right? So when we take a differential backup, it just gets uploaded and it's geo-replicated. And we completely rely actually on the storage service to do this for us. So there's nothing we do. We just put it in there and we chose this geo-redundant storage, right? This is a good synergy between teams, actually. So let's say something happens and this data center goes down. What you can do is you can just go in and restore this last backup within 24 hours to any other region that you would like to do. You can do this at any point in time, actually. So this doesn't require a disaster case to happen. So if you choose to, I want to move this database somewhere else. I would like to, do some historic analysis somewhere else. And like, you can just go in, take those backups, and essentially create a copy that way of the database. Here again, is a self-service API. You can go in through the portal. It is the last known backup within 24 hours. And there's no, as I said earlier, there's actually no extra cost for you that comes to play because we store all of your data, right? So this is all included in the price that you pay. The only point in time when you start paying is when you actually do the restore and have a database running. And as I said earlier, the restore time objective is, well, here it says greater equals 24 hours. So simply, it can be very fast, right? If there's a non-disaster case and you go in and say, well, I want to restore this, then it probably happens immediately, right? Whereas if there's thousands of databases in a queue, it just might take some time, and we might, in fact, not have capacity for it. One thing to point out here, your database will actually get a new connection string. So it's a new URL because you restore it into a new server. There's just something to keep in mind. Just simply because the server, like in the case of a disaster, if the server goes down, you can't reuse the server string. It's unique, server name string. All right, so standard geo-replication. I already said this is the replication that you can do here. The region that you can select is the paired region in Azure. Once you went in and established the connection, we make sure that all the data has been copied, and whoever was yesterday in the overview session actually saw Bill doing this, and we even have a fancy way of displaying it that Bill showed. So what happens here, if this goes down, we will make a call after about 1 hour. So we obviously we would detect that the region has an issue. We're going to go and investigate this, and within roughly an hour, we will notify all the impacted people that there has been a degradation in the service. So you can see this in the portal. There will be like a red bang next to your server, and you'll probably get an email saying, hey, you know, we are very sorry. Something is really wrong here. Please go have a look. Then what you can choose to do is to do a failover and activate that secondary and make this your new primary database and start working against it. And then, as I said before, you would have to set up a new secondary for this one in a new paired region with regards to standard, or if you use premium, you would have the option to actually go somewhere else. So these are actions that you have to take. You have a couple of options here. You don't have to immediately go and initiate this failover, right? As I said, we actually not going to force you into it. So you can choose and say, well, you know what, I have a bunch of customers, right? I can explain to them, well, the database is offline for a couple hours, but it's very hard for me to say, well, actually, I lost some data of yours, right? So there's obviously a trade-off that you potentially have to make, and which is why we, in fact, don't do the failovers automatically for you. What we will do, however, we take 24 hours to make a call on whether we think we can recover this data center or not. So after 24 hours, we might say, you know what, like we looked into it and the data center is gone, right? And we will then force the failover. So after 24 hours, if we figured out there's no way that we can ever restore the data in that data center, we actually, if you haven't done so at this point, we will force the failover and make all the secondary databases that were there primary databases. So essentially, you have, like, you will get a notification around an hour after the incident happened, and you have more or less then another 23 hours to make a call on, hey, do you want to do the failover yourself, or do you want to wait for Microsoft to try to figure it out and solve the problem, which could be, right? But so, for example, if you think about we are under attack, right, and not in a war type of scenarios, but in a like, I don't know, DOS attack, something like this, right? Maybe at some point we'll actually manage to stop this attack and the data center just comes back online and then you haven't lost any data. Yeah, you had downtime, but the data loss is just not there, right? So just something to think about. Just in summary, the restore time objective, we say less than 2 hours just because we take roughly an hour to give you the notification something is wrong, and then we anticipate that it will take you some time to actually go through the R drill. And normally, the restore point is less than 30 minutes, which means so any, like you shouldn't lose more than 30 minutes of data from the point of the incidents back, just because the replication normally happens on the fly, and this is that fast enough to normally not lose more. Again, failover scenarios through REST APIs. I covered earlier, well, we take care that the data is being replicated automatically. you can see a status of the replication through DMVs and REST API. And well, you can have one secondary in standard, in the standard replication scenario. All right, so let's switch to the last of the replication options, which is the what we call the active geo-replication. I said earlier, you're not tied to any region anymore. You can just choose wherever you want to go. In the scenario on the slide, we say the primary is in the south central US data center. Well, you chose to have one in the east and one in the west. If we lose this data center, it's then up to you to make the call, which is actually the new primary, right? So you have multiple replicas, but you need to make a call on which is your new primary, which is where do you want to direct your insert traffic to. Let's say you chose the US West region by just doing the same failover as in the standard replication. What you then, again, need to think about, if you want to have geo-replication for this new primary, you need to set it up by yourself again. So you would choose another up to four secondary regions. One thing to point out at this point is if you cannot, once you make a secondary new primary and you cannot point it to a previously existing secondary and keep going from there. So you would have to create a new secondary, and then we copy all the data over there, and then you keep going from there. All right, and here the time objective is a little stricter. We say it's probably within an hour, and the restore point objective is actually less than 5 minutes. So we replicate your data with such a high priority that we think you should never lose more than 5 minutes of data in this kind of scenario. So thing goes down, right? Like we think we keep up with your transactions no longer than 5 minutes. Here again, it's the same REST API, PowerShell APIs that you can do to do this opt-in failover. You can do it at any point in time, which is a differentiator to the standard replication scenario. So at any point in time, you can choose to fail over your primary to one of the secondaries and do the DR drill in this case. Again, the replication is fully automatic. You don't need to worry about it. And yeah, it's up to four replicas, four secondaries, including the standard ones. So I guess one standard one plus three active geo-replication ones in any region you like. Okay, with covering all those capabilities, let's switch over to the demo part. Let's get locked in here. All right, so what I'm going to show, first I'm going to create an active geo-replication for one of my premium databases. So the one, this one here is a, so it's called P1 because it's actually a P1 performance level. You go to this geo-replication tab up here, and then you click on add secondary. And so this is the current live portal. Whoever was yesterday in build session actually saw the new fancy one with the map, right? So I'm using the current one. And then in this tab, you can, given that it is a premium database, you can actually choose, do you want to do an offline, which is the standard the standard replication, or do an online version of it. I'm going to do an online version, and I am going to Japan East. And so this database is in South Central US. All right. I choose this server here. And just get this going, and I need to confirm, just given that I create a new database, actually, I have to pay for it. So we make sure that you're aware of this. So now this process is kicked off. It will take a couple seconds to get going. And it's being provisioned, and the data is being copied initially. While this is running, what I would like to show is a restore scenario. So going back here, looking at all the servers, and you see the list is long and very complicated. I believe this is the one. Looking at the databases here, you get in the list of databases, you get this restore option. This is at the bottom here. You click on it, restore. And so I have created those databases yesterday. So there's actually not much restore history. But from this, you will get the general idea. We ask you to give it a name, And by default, we're going to call it, give it the same prefix as the database was called anyway. And then we're going to add a suffix, which is the point in time that you restore to. And you have this slider bar, and that, as I just said, given that the database only existed from yesterday, is not that impressive. But what you can do is you get the earliest point in time that you can restore from, which was yesterday at 15:12 UTC. And so if I actually go in here, change this date, and I say 15, so now it says, well, that doesn't work, but 45, so that's a valid point in time that I can restore. You can see that the name changed, right? Just go in, kick this off, and now the system goes back, goes to the backups, right, takes this daily differential backup, applies the logs up to the point in time that I specified. So this actually takes some time, right, because we need to get the data restored and so on. So we're not going to wait for this to finish. Instead, we're going to check if the other database is online, which it is. So I now created this database in Japan. It is online, and the initial seeding happened. And so let me now show you a little bit of how this replication, like how fast in the end it actually is. So what I have here is I have a database that has a simple table in it, which is this test table, which I created earlier. And the script on the left-hand side is on the primary database, and it will insert data. You don't need to pay too much attention to the script itself, right? So the keys, it will insert data, and it will insert 729 rows 10 times in a row. So it's not a super large data set, but it's not a single row. It's a little more. And then on the right-hand side, this is a script that will wait for the data to come in and output when it gets the data. So given that I created a new database, I need to now actually connect to this database. It's this server. And it's called P1. So let's connect. And so the first thing, once it is connected, first thing that I want to do is actually want to see if the schema has been populated. So the primary database should have fed the table already. So if I query this, it doesn't exist. So maybe I have never created it. I never created it. So let's see if it is here now. All right. So you can see I created the table. And remember, US, right, Japan. It's not the cross-hemisphere replication that we heard about in the foundational session, but if you slice the Earth the other way, it still is, right? So it's still around the world. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to kick off the script over here that inserts the data, and then at the very end, it will query a view that gives us the last replication point in time. So I kick the script off here, go to the messages, and it will start outputting that it inserted data. And then I'll start the script on the other side that will output when it receives the data. So if you just follow like the messages, how they come in, you see like more or less instantaneous. Like the rows that the transaction that I committed on the left-hand side, the data is actually there on the other side. And remember, you know, doing it around the world, you can see how fast this is. And this gives us the confidence of saying, hey, you know what, like it's probably you only lose like 30 seconds or 5 minutes of data at the worst, right? Because it is so fast and is independent of how many of those secondaries you have, right? And it really doesn't matter. Like I kind of chose like a long distance just to illustrate this, right? If you do it within the United States, it's probably even faster, right? So you can see now this thing finished. And the last replication here was at 11:43:30, and over here on the receiving side, you can see it's 11:43:35. So there's a little bit of a lag just because of the round trips that I do from here to query the data. So you can see even if it was the worst case and it's 5 seconds, it is pretty fast. All right, and with that, let me hand it over to Eyal. And let's move to the auditing part.
What do I click in order to?
Oh, just on the
this one. Okay, so hi everyone. Again, I'm Eyal, and I will discuss the auditing. We're discussing auditing in Azure SQL. Is anybody of you using Azure SQL? SQL? Are you using auditing in SQL or in SQL on the prem? Yeah, on the box, so a few of you. So what we did is, if you look on the format of what's at the end coming out, it's very similar to what you get on the box product, okay? Same, the way to set it up is different, again, because we are on the cloud. So first of all, for those of you who don't use auditing, why we need auditing? Something that Jan mentioned before is the compliance, okay? So there are two different parts in compliance when you talk about cloud services or databases in the cloud. There is the platform or Microsoft being compliant and the cloud operation being compliant with this or that regulation, okay? Which is not what I'm discussing now. This is, you can go to the side, there are all a bunch of regulations that it's compliant with. What we're discussing is how you, in your needs, need to set up things in order, and auditing is one of them, in order to be compliant. Of course, auditing is not the only thing that you need to do in order to be compliant with this and that regulation, and it changes between country to country, it changes between industry to industry. For example, the PCI is, for those of you who know, are the credit card regulation, the HIPAA is the healthcare, and there are other compliances out there. So this is one reason that you might need to turn on auditing, and again, it's not enough just to turn it on in order to be compliant. You still need some policy to go through all through the auditing and check up stuff and some other things that you need to do, of course. Second reason you might need to turn on is for security incidents. So again, depending on the policy of your company and the way you work, there's some companies that go over this regularly, once a day, once a week, once every couple of weeks, to just check if everything is working right. And there are no incidents that look suspicious. On another side of it, you might have a breach. Like, and we have heard a lot about such incidents in the last few months from Target and other incidents. And then you need to go and see, okay, what happened? I want to actually investigate and see who did what, when, and so on and so forth. So the information is there, and you can access it in order to check and see what's happened. The last thing in this list, so there are of course some other stuff you can use it for, is the operational insights. So you just want to know what's going on. How many queries to this database, to this territory, to that territory. It might be split between different data centers and so on. So there are various reasons why you want to actually use auditing. So where we start? First of all, we need to actually start collecting the records and return the information. There are three ways which you can do it. I will demo one of them and mention the other one and show the other one. One, it's in the new portal, the one that you saw before. You can also do it from the current portal that we're using, and of course you can do it in PowerShell. The second part of it is actually accessing the information. So all the audit logs are stored in Azure tables, and you can access it with whatever tools you want to access it with. We have a key just to write to the storage, so we cannot read from these tables, so you can just write the information to there. And the last thing is to actually get insights. So all of us are really, really like to go and look at audit logs and read through these logs, right? It's really fun. But if you get some tables and some views and some graphs in which helps you with it, it's much nicer. What we did, and I'll show you, we actually developed a template in Excel, which you can actually connect to the storage very easily, a few clicks and you connect it. And then there are some templates there, which are graphical templates from which you can drill down into the logs themselves, which can help you look at these logs for the different scenarios. A bit about how it works. You have the applications that are running against the database. It can be application, it can be just users, whatever. All the traffic that is actually getting to the database is getting logged. You can set up, and I'll show in a minute how you can set it up, about what's getting logged. You don't have to log everything. You can pick and choose what's get logged. And this again is stored in the Azure tables, which you can choose. You can choose the tables. You can choose a table per database, a table per server, all the databases to the same table. It's very flexible. And then you can connect to this table, and the logs are there. And you can connect with your tools. You can connect with the Excel that we're giving, whatever you want to do. If you go to the new portal, which I'll show, then once traffic gets logged, there is a pie there or a bagel that you can see on the left side that actually shows you in the last 24 hours how many events were logged and what is the numbers there, and you can just go to the portal and just look at it just to get a feeling of what's going on in the database or in the server. Again, I mentioned the Excels, and this is available for basic, standard, and premium, so your database need to be in this basic, standard, and premium SKUs in order to work with it. The policy itself, there are a few ways in which you can set up a policy. One is you can set it per server. So you set the policy as a default policy for the server, and all the databases in the server will be, all the traffic to the databases in the server will be logged according to the default policy of the server and to the same table. You can set it per database. So if you have in a server several databases, you don't want to set all the databases to do the same logs for this reason or that. You can set a policy per database, and again, you can set also a storage per database, and you can mix and match. So there are cases in which you have a server, a lot of, for example, basic databases, which the information there is not that crucial. You just want to know who logs into the database, so you can set all the, as a server default, a policy that just logs this, but you do have like a premium database with critical information there, and then you want to log everything that's actually been done against this database, then you can go to this database, change the policy for this database, and it will override the server. So you can work it either way you like. So let's see how we can do it, and then just log in here. Okay, so this is the new portal. I will show it in the new portal. I just want to show you where you can find it in the current portal. So if you go to one of the databases here, and this is now, the auditing now is in public preview. So if you're not signed up to the preview, you will not be able to get in. You'll need to sign up for the preview first. It will be GA'd, and then it will be available to anyone. So I just click on this. This is something which was added for the auditing, and then I can here disable, enable, and set it up. So this is where you find it in the current portal. If you go to the new portal and you browse, you can browse to the databases. Let's pick one of them. Okay. Now, here, when you scroll down to the operations part, here you can see the part that says enable and set up auditing. Okay, if I click it, then I get to the part in which I can set up the auditing. I'll start from here. Here is the events that I said you can pick and choose what events you want to log. I can log only data access and the security exceptions, or I can log everything. Now I need to choose the storage, okay, where I store the logs, and then it opens up here the blade with all the storage accounts that I have. Our recommendation is to have the storage in the same data center as the database, just for performance point of view, but it's not a must. It will work also if it's in a different data center. The secondary and primary, you don't need to play with it once you set it up the first time. It's there in case you want to change the keys for the storage. okay? If you want to send the keys to the storage and keep the service running, you need to switch to the secondary, iterate the keys in the storage, the primary key, and then switch back to the primary in order for it to keep running and not lose data, because if you switch the key without changing this, we will lose the access to the database. And the last thing you need is the connection string. If you can see here, there is a secure, this is the only difference between the connection string, the secure right here, and you need to change it or the application to use this connection string in order for the to the data to be logged. So once I'm doing all this, I can just save it, and this do okay, and this will be logged. Another thing I can do is save it as a server default. So I can, once I set up the auditing for a specific database, I can also save it as a server default for this entire server. So all the databases in the server will have the same policy. If we go to a different database, this is one that already set up, and it's loading here the information. There wasn't any traffic in the last 24 hours, so it doesn't show me anything. And if I click on and turn on this, the configuration for this database, you can see that this database actually is using the default server database, and I cannot change here anything unless I click this, and then it opens, and then I can change anything. So let's keep it on the same as the database, and if I'll go to the server, I think that's this server. So again, if I scroll down a bit, there is the auditing setting here, and this now on the server level. And again, it's the same experience, exactly the same experience. Here you can choose if to enable it for all the databases on the servers, yes or no. We'll choose yes, of course, and I can here change it and save it. And once it's saved, again, it's changed all the policies to all the databases in this server. And if I chose the right server, it should also change the configuration for this database. Yeah, you see? Now it's changed here also. Now, if I'll go to a database that I know that we already had some traffic on it on the last day, so you see that here, that's the traffic that I had for this database, that I logged for this database in the last day. And of course, here you need to pay attention. It's not all the traffic that was to this database unless you chose to log everything, okay? This is what was actually logged in the audit logs for this database. So if you choose just part of it, it won't show everything. It shows what's getting logged. And here you can actually go and see the portions of this and play around with this information. And here you see it open in Excel. This will get you actually to the Excel template. Again, you will need to download the template. It's not opening automatically there because you need to connect the template to the storage. The storage is your storage. We cannot connect it automatically because we need a credential to the storage. Once you set up the storage, you have the passwords and the key to the storage. You need to set it up in the Excel in order for it to be connected. And this is a few steps. I'll skip this and just show you the template and what you can do with the template. So this is the template that we actually created. In this view, you can see some of the things that we think you should pay attention to when you look at it. So that can be, one of them can be affected roles, a large number of affected roles. So if there is a massive data change in the database, this will show up here. It might be okay because you're doing such stuff and the application is doing it, which is fine. In other cases, it might be something that you need to look at. If you want to look exactly at what was this, so you just double click, and then this is actually the record that was logged, okay? This is from the auditing, and here you can see all the information of what was done, and also here, that's the actual event that was submitted to the database, and you can see it was updating actually this blocked everybody that's named John from doing something. So again, it might be right, it might be wrong. It depends on what you're doing and your application, your operations. Now, what I like is this view, in which you can actually see if it's consistent or not with what you're doing in the database. So if you look at this point here, this is the failed logins, for example, you see that there are no failed logins usually, and here there's actually a few of them in a very short period of time, and this is also consistent with this change in the database records that is here. So, and again, it's not consistent with that, what's the regular operation of the database. So this is something, again, that you should go and look on it. It might be okay because there was some, I don't know, huge sale and a lot of traffic or some massive update to the database, it might be okay, but it's something that you should look at it. And again, also from here, if you want to see the failed logins, for example, then you just double-click it and you get the actual failed logins and the names of who tried to log in and so on and so forth. This is a view, which is a view from a different angle about what's going on in my database. It's like an operational view, and I have these are different databases that I actually collected to these tables. I can see the distribution of traffic by day in a month, by day in the week, by hours in a day. I can click on any part of it and just see this part as, and how it actually populated the different graphs. If I'm interested in specifically in one of the databases, I can go and just, for example, here, I can click on this and see what this database actually and how it is behaving over time. So here I can actually learn and maybe try to optimize the operation and see what databases is busy, what's not, who's doing what, and where. So that's more or less what I want to discuss about auditing. And if you have any questions about this or what Jan discussed before, then this is the time. Other than storage costs?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any reason. The only reason is that it might be, let's say, cluttering your information. It depends how you actually consume it, what you write there. But other than that, it's just the storage cost, and the storage is really, it's a minimal cost. It's not that expensive. It doesn't affect anything else. It's just your decision. But we heard from customers that they, for example, if the application is running, they're saying, okay, we're not interested in all what the application is doing, we're trusting the application, so we just want to say, just the access, that's the connection logins, okay? But if the administration is doing something, we want to log everything. So there are some, but the options are there.
Any other questions?
Okay.
All right. Do you want to show the rest of the
references? Oh, okay. We have some.
Yeah.
So, where is it? Here it is. So, there is some. You can find us here today and tomorrow. There is a session, it's tomorrow.
Yeah, it's tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
You're doing, right?
Yeah, tomorrow. So tomorrow at 10:15, I believe, is the exact time, is the deep dive on the performance, predictable performance and scale out. So anything performance related will be covered tomorrow at 10:15, same room.
And you can, from here you can get more information how to sign up for the auditing preview, the link actually to sign up. So if you have an account, it just you have to click through it and you signed up. How to get started with the auditing and also where to download the Excel. But once you are in the portal, you can also download it from the link there. This is something, anything else here which we have to...
Yeah, that's just the general information, right? So all the resources that we have around SQL database, yeah.
Again, you have all this information here, yeah. And please complete the evaluation form.
All right, thank you very much, and have a good day.